Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having seven kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does all the work for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. Visit Picasso to see thousands of listings. That's PACASO.com.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Reminder to all you guys that you can support the podcast by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribing, and all of that other good stuff that you do. To break down what we got going on as the playoffs approach, we got Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going?
You're out of practice. To break down what we got going on.
You know what? I was in a rhythm, then I was thrown off.
Clearly. Anyway, luckily you get a chance to try again.
I'm gonna try again by introducing our other guest very formally and awkwardly. We have Matt Moore of the Action Network, also a Tristan Thompson love life expert. How's it going today, Matt?
Great. I think it was Carter who tweeted, like, no, it was David. David tweeted, oh, what do I need to know about this Tristan Thompson thing? I was like, Tristan Thompson thing? I was like, is he hurt? Are they doing a lineup change? What's going on? Let me search the Twitters. And that was the moment that I regretted my decision. And the results came up and I just started to weep. I just started, like, tears flowing down my face for what our society has become.
Now, my theory is that things have to get as weird as possible for the Cavs in order for them to have success.
Like feed on it. It's just like, it's important.
And like the similarities are all there from 2016. I mean, Tristan left his pregnant girlfriend back then. They didn't fire their head coach, but in a lot of ways, Isaiah Thomas was like the David Blatt of players. Because he's just talking about past success that he had and ruined the team chemistry. So they got rid of him. Steph's hurt again. Like, all the similarities are there.
Matt?
your thoughts?
Bullying us on Twitter the last couple weeks.
Thanks so much for joining this program. Yeah, I will say, like, it's weird because what winds up happening is it's very unpopular and it's considered not uncouth, gross to even discuss a player's personal life in any sort of basketball context. Like,
yeah,
it's supposed to be this thing, but I don't understand why we do this where it's like, that shouldn't have any sort of impact about how we evaluate him as a player. And it's like, look, if I'm having trouble at home, it's going to bleed over into work. Like, I used to work in an office and you knew and like, oh, what's wrong with Dave? Oh, well, Dave's having trouble with the wife and they're going through some stuff. Like, that winds up impacting your work. Like, when I was younger and would have breakups, I wouldn't get anything done in the office. I would just sit in my office and like watch YouTube clips of sad songs all day. So like, I don't know. I just think
counterpoint. Tristan Thompson didn't look like he was having a tough time.
Oh my god. All right, we're going to pivot away from that. which let's pivot because we're talking about how Tristan Thompson's going to perform in a roundabout way. Who do you think is kind of going to be the outside looking in, Matt? Just kind of from an outsider's perspective, do you think the Cavs lineup come playoffs is going to be based on the matchup, or do you think that because of this Jeff Green starting and Jose Calderon having minutes, that it's going to be Tristan Thompson and maybe even J.R. Smith on the outside looking in?
Sometimes things evolve in the playoffs. I'm kind of expecting that here, where I think they'll probably start with what they've been showcasing lately, which is a lot of Calderon, which is stunning, and a lot of Jeff Green, which is equally stunning. And probably not as much of Nance and not as much of Thompson. And any game that they struggle, Cavs Twitter will freak out and say, just why won't they play Thompson? Why won't they play Nance? Rah! And that will be all the yelling. If they win, nothing will be said about that whatsoever. It'll just be about how great LeBron is. And then if they hit a snag for long enough, and if Ty Lue does have to make an adjustment, that's probably what will happen, right? Is like, you know, you'll see like, oh, well, there's been a lineup change and, you know, Jeff Green's out and they're going to love Nance. And then they'll kind of go from there. I think Thompson, it's going to be – here's the thing. I don't know what the Cavs' defensive scheme is going to look like in the playoffs, because I don't know if they're going to continue their asinine off-ball switching. I did a lot of film piece I did for Action Network today, and they're doing it less – but the bigs are still switching a little bit. And every time that they switch Thompson, that person is going to be like, I am walking to the other side of the floor. I'm just going to space 4 feet. I'm doing a Ryan Anderson, even though I'm a 23% three-point shooter. I'm just going to go stand over here as far away from the paint as possible. And that opens up the rim. And that's really the issue, is like Thompson can be really effective if they run a scheme that doesn't limit him. If they run something more like Portland, Thompson, I think, can still be very effective. But that said, that also requires Thompson to actually play like 2016 again. And we just haven't seen Tristan Thompson play like that since then.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to like – first off, I don't think most of Cavs Twitter is going to be clamoring for more Tristan Thompson. I get like – I just get people like – I'm almost getting the David treatment, where it's like, if we had said anything nice about Tristan in the last pod – and he has 2 to 3 minutes of bad play, we just have some people that like adding us just with like, see, and it's like, all right, sorry. But I do think we need to talk about Green and how committed they should be to him. I mean,
I think we need to talk about Green and how awesome he is.
Can I note that people were yelling at Justin and I for being too high on Green earlier in the year?
Yep. That's how it goes.
And we just didn't want him to shoot a bunch of threes, and now we're the Jeff Green hating ass podcast. And I don't know how that happens, but I'm not thrilled about it.
I found it really fitting, Matt, that you had talked about it in that piece, how there's a little bit of the flying death machine, and that got me thinking of the death lineup, and then my mind just went to Jeff Green being Harrison Barnes, except instead of Harrison Barnes, who was a good shooter that just forgot how to shoot for a series, Jeff Green is just starting at that point. And I really wonder, as effective as he's been in a lot of those lineups, is what happens when teams just completely ignore him and just scheme for that. That's my big fear.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about something in an abstract terms, and let's start with this. Jeff Green has not been a good NBA player for years and years and years and years and years. And there's been negative net ratings all over the place, and it hasn't worked. He's been disappointing, and he's a terrible three-point shooter. Like, all of this is true. I want to talk about Jeff Green specifically in the context of what the Cavs are looking to do, how he's played this year, and I want to provide something that spacing is not as simple as we kind of talk about it.
Definitely agree.
Marcus Smart spaces the floor exceptionally well. And the reason is teams don't leave him open. They guard him like he's a shooter. And everyone goes, why are you guarding him? It's Marcus Smart. But they continue to do it over and over again. There's psychological impacts. Furthermore, here's a crazy number for you. Just an absolutely bonkers, ludicrous number for you. Via Synergy Sports, guess what percentile Jeff Green is in spot up? Yes.
82nd.
63rd.
That's high.
I went That's high. Close.
That's closer. He's 56th.
Okay.
Now, on dribble jumpers, he's 21st, which is horrible. On no dribble jumpers, he's 50th percentile. He's average.
Yeah.
He's absolutely average in those specific types of situations.
Which he did a lot of earlier in the season. And that's why he was effective and we were kind of caping for him. It was that he was not dribbling. I think it was like the first 2 months of the season, he didn't even hit a three-pointer off the dribble. But then after the All-Star break, some of that decision-making was breaking down, even though the effectiveness of those lineups was still there.
Right. But he does it enough to keep the spacing. And then what he's really good at is when teams close, he's able to get to the basket off the cut, which is quite frankly something that not a lot of the other guys in the Cavs have had the ability to do over the last 2 years, especially last year. Like last year's club really was just, hey, here's the best basketball player on earth and four dudes who can shoot as quickly as possible once the ball grazes their fingertips off of the pass. But when the Warriors or whoever is like, maybe we'll get to the edge. Now, their offense is awesome no matter what, so it really doesn't matter. Like, their offense is awesome this year. It was awesome last year. It's going to be awesome pretty much no matter what. But like Green's ability to actually be just a larger body, just an athlete, just somebody who's not going to get blown completely by, somebody that you can't force a switch on and be like, oh, we're going to obliterate this guy in the post. Like, that's valuable. Like, Green's not – when Green gets the ball and he does something bad, the problem is when it's LeBron, every possession feels precious because you're always going to have a better option, which is LeBron doing anything. Mm-hmm. But like that's just not reasonable to have. Like, you're always going to have it. So you have to kind of consider like, okay, does what Jeff gives you overall, is that impact valuable enough to offset how terrible he is at shooting three-pointers? And the answer for the Cavs this year has been consistently yes. Like, there's just no way to argue against it. There's too much. We've got eye tests. We've got data. We've got lineup combos. We've got – there's a million ways to look at it, and the answer comes back the same.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a lot of ways he is very limited in who he can play with because of his tendencies. And it just so happens that he's gotten a decent amount of minutes with LeBron and Love, and I think that's really one of the trios that he pairs best with. My concern is obviously the shooting. My concern is also the rebounding. He is a god awful rebounder, and maybe an engaged LeBron makes up for that. But I'm worried about second chance points as this team like works their way through. Like, and in a lot of ways, I think the decision to roll with Green, especially from the perspective of, hey, I really think a lot of it comes down to, we're not scared of anyone except the Warriors, and we want to throw him on Durant, so let's go. But I just think in almost every other matchup, the Cavs match up better with a traditional center next to Love. But yeah, I mean, it's just really Larry Nance. Hard to know.
Like, Nance can do a lot of the things that Tristan did, at least when it comes to switching and the defensive schemes that they're trying to do better than or as good as Tristan used to. He doesn't have the consistency and he fouls a whole lot, but he brings other things to the table with his ability to screen. And one thing you had mentioned last week, Carter, which I kind of marinated on, was how Jeff Green's kind of a hedge on Rodney Hood and not believing that he's a stopper.
Now we thought about that.
My thought is it's more of a hedge against LeBron because they don't believe in him as a one-on-one defender anymore, and they like him being the roamer. Like, I think Hood is kind of going to get that Kyrie matchup out of the guards. Like, George Hill is going to guard the better guard throughout the playoffs, and Hood's going to be on the other one. And I don't think they're necessarily worried about that. I think it's more having that primary stopper for whoever LeBron's guy would be.
Yeah, there's maybe, I would agree with that more if it weren't for the fact that they're playing in these playoffs a lot of great point guard shooting guard combos and have consistently thrown Jeff Green on one of those guys. I mean,
you're very generous. Green,
they've thrown Green on Harden. They've thrown Green on DeRozan. It just really, to me, Matt, basically the point I made was it feels like Jeff Green in the starting lineup is almost more of a defensive move because they don't feel like they have anyone to throw on these good scorers. And it just feels like an expression of their lack of faith in Rodney Hood, which, you know, is fairly well earned. He's not a great defender. What do you think of that point? Do you think Jeff Green starting is more about Jeff Green or more about Rodney Hood?
I think it's about maintaining LeBron's energy level. Let's skip ahead to, like, let's say it's 4-5. It's 4-5 Pacers, and they'll take care of that, I think. Like, I think, like, if you ask me to really dig into it, I may come out and be like, I really like the way that Indiana matches up. Like, I got to sit down, and I got to look at a whole bunch of information and data and everything else. But I feel pretty comfortable they're going to come out of that. So you're looking at Toronto in the second round. And in that scenario, like, you honestly need to engage LeBron on ball because I feel like it's the only way you're going to keep his attention. Like, as somebody that's done an unhealthy amount of time trying to understand why the Cavaliers are so horrible at defense, I feel pretty confident in saying a lot of it is just LeBron can't be bothered to pay attention to things anymore.
Yep. I think that's wrong. Fair. Yeah.
I still am shook by that podcast Zach Lowe was on recently where he was like some exec told him their internal metrics said that LeBron was still a good defender. And I was like, what?
That makes me think of Daryl Morey tweeting the other day that there are no good metrics on telling someone whether or not someone's a good defender.
Yeah. So
sorry to cut you off, Matt.
So I guess here's kind of a good way to think of it. LeBron, his defense isn't a problem on 8 out of 10 possessions. It's just that the two that it's a problem on are so bad, you can't help but just be like, holy God, what is he doing? Like, why did you just like let Fred VanVleet go? And just
because he didn't want to.
So my thing is, if you're playing this, let's say if they wind up in a match with the Sixers, which wouldn't be until the ECF, but let's say that it's with the Sixers, you know, engage LeBron on Simmons and be like, hey, teach the rookie a lesson, body him, teach him what playoff defense looks like. LeBron can take that challenge. He doesn't have to worry about him shooting, right? Because he can't. Mm-hmm. And you know, if Simmons gets by him and gets into the lane, well, okay, then now. But the big thing here is if you do get in that situation and it's like, oh, LeBron really is struggling, like he's having a hard time with his energy level and he's getting beat, like he's getting blow by. You do have Green who you can throw on him. Like if you put Rodney Hood on Simmons, Simmons is going to body him into the post into oblivion.
Right.
If you put George Hill on Simmons, he's going to body him in the post into oblivion. You put Jeff Green on him, and Simmons is probably going to operate pretty normally. He's not going to target that matchup. Versus the Raptors, it's a little bit different. And I actually think that that's a tougher one for LeBron because there's nobody for him to actively defend. Kawhi runs into this quite a bit with the Spurs, where one of the reasons that I took the Clippers in that 2015 series where they were matched up in the first round was because I was like, Kawhi doesn't have anybody to guard. Like, there's nowhere for Kawhi to make an impact. They're just going to take Wesley Johnson and put him in the corner. And they're just going to remove Kawhi entirely from the play. And that's what they did, is the Clippers just were like, it didn't matter because that's what Wes Johnson does the rest of the time anyway. So So with the Raptors, it's kind of the same deal where unless you put LeBron on DeRozan and are just like, all right, I need you to go shut down DeMar, and that can work. But that's a lot of energy. And it risks foul trouble, and there's a lot of kind of damage there. But
yeah, and it's not something they've done in the past either. They just kind of rely on trapping.
Yeah, so LeBron's off ball and he's in that free roaming free safety range. That's where he gets in trouble. He still gets in trouble in that regard because he just like I'm really curious to know how much of the scouting report he reads anymore. Like you can imagine in 2012 when he was with the Heat, like he probably was like in depth actually reading up on, okay, this is what this guy does and that's what he does. I'm not sure he's there mentally anymore to be like, oh, I really, because like he was like daring Dario Saric to shoot, and it was like, what? But he's gonna kill you. What are you doing? Don't know. So I'm really fascinated to see kind of what role they use him in. But to me, Green is really effective in the role of basically, if LeBron does get tired, Green can take assignments and give LeBron a chance to basically rest by playing off ball. It's just that then you risk him resting too much to the point where you guys get open shots.
Yeah. You know what's interesting is about that, though, is that Green also isn't a particularly good team defender.
No.
But he actually does okay when he's just engaged on the ball.
Right.
Because he's enormous. Right. But I do want to ask this, Matt, because you're kind of talking about how, you know, the Cavs might be well served to engage LeBron on ball. Do you think their highest defensive ceiling is with LeBron off ball and fully engaged?
No.
Really? See, yeah. I kind of disagree with that.
Yeah. So a lot of it is that I've actually seen him try and engage on closeouts and be like, I can get there. And then he didn't get there.
Wasn't he like 96th percentile on closeouts or something in the playoffs last year? Am I making that stat up? I saw someone post
it. You're absolutely right. You're 100% right. So there's a lot of indications that that should be the data. Part of that, though, I think has to do with
it's a tiny sample, too. And
well, messy. Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the weapons he was guarding. And well, and to be perfectly honest with you, a lot of it has to do with like how I don't mean to belittle what Cleveland did last year because they were dominant. They rolled, right?
I saw like, your take.
Yeah, we read your article, Matt.
I know. I'm just saying.
We do our homework.
I'm just saying, like, a lot of it was just the teams that the Cavaliers faced continuously made stupid decisions and played like garbage. Like, they just really, really did. And Cleveland deserves full credit for, I guess, forcing them into that. But I think a lot of it inherently had to do with
they were helped along the way in that pursuit.
Yeah, so it can't be both.
And I know something about that little that graph in your piece is that it was like two very, very good reasons. And it was like, and then Tristan Thompson turned Al Horford into a pumpkin. I'm like, no, that's just Tristan Thompson playing well against Al Horford, you jerk.
No,
we have years of data on that.
Right. I didn't mean to make that into like a
offended.
Oh, this is like a random thing. It's like, no, like Al Horford's always going to get beat by Tristan Thompson. Al Horford gets beat by players like Tristan Thompson. Here's a nasty thing that Spurs fans don't want you to know. Tim Duncan had the same problem with hyper-athletic centers. Same problem. Dwight Howard used to eat his lunch when Dwight was an actual living, breathing NBA player. Like, back in Howard's prime, he would annihilate him. When Rudy Gobert – there's a reason Utah has had a terrific record versus San Antonio the last couple of years. It's because all of their bigs, the way that they play, specifically get exposed by hyper-athletic big dudes. And Horford is, like, 100% a Spurs player that happens to play for Boston. So, like – it's not surprising. It doesn't mean that Horford, and unlike what Cavs fans think, it doesn't mean that Al Horford sucks and is a bad player who doesn't deserve a max contract and is a fraud. It means that he matches up really poorly in that situation. So part of it is, well, yeah, of course they won that matchup. They're always going to win that matchup. Like, they have a matchup advantage there, but it also, like, the fact that the number one team in the Eastern Conference was built around a player who the Cavs specifically have a counter for is one of those things that it worked out that way, and that's awesome. It'll be interesting to see what happens if that's not the case. Like, and here's the thing, though, is I don't know if anybody has the player that's going to be able to do it, right? Like, you got to have a player that's going to do it. It's either going to have to be the Raptors bench filling in that role as, like, a collective being that player, or right, it's going to have to be Joel Embiid. And those are the only two things that are going to stop the Cavaliers from getting to the finals. Those are the only two things that can do it.
On that note, I mean, you kind of glossed over it, and I think that was probably the right thing to do just for the sake of having a cogent piece. But you did just kind of go, the Sixers are unknown. They're a little scary. And then you just kind of moved on. What kind of chance do you really think that the Sixers have? And Justin, I'm interested in your opinion as well.
Matt, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I don't. Them playing that game the other night was really bad, right? For trying, because it makes you watch them and you're like, God, they're playing so well right now. And they have so much energy and chemistry. And you look at it and you're like, they have shooters and they can switch and they've got athletic forwards that throw at LeBron and they can close out and they've got all of these and a dynamic playmaker and this and they're a great defense. Like, there's all these reasons. And then there's me that's like, yeah, but I remember how many times I've been excited for these young squads in playoff environments and how often it hits them in the mouth, how different it is. Mm-hmm. The real question is going to be, so like the Wizards crashed the party. When the Wizards made the playoffs, they were still brutally young. Wall and Beal were – like Beal was a baby when they first made the playoffs and trounced the Raptors in that first round series. But like they crashed it and made it. If the Lakers had just been a little crappier in 2010, the Thunder probably get past them in that first round series. So there are young squads that have had the talent to actually do it. But I've also seen a lot of young teams get there and be like, oh, this is really hard. Oh, everyone's trying now. Oh, this is like super tense. And like, if I don't make every single shot, it's devastating. Oh God, why is everyone running so fast? Like part of it has to be really disorienting is if you're a young player and you spent 2 years in the league and you're used to one pace, and then all of a sudden everyone is going 90 miles an hour. It's got to be disorienting to have that kind of experience.
Yeah. It's playing in your first rec league game after playing pickup for like a couple months.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit, guys are working really hard now. Yeah. I thought I had a few intense games of pickup, but wait, no, rec league is way more intense. Guys get back on defense and leak out when I don't pay attention to them. It's competitive. Yeah. Like, so there's a huge difference.
But on the other end of it, if Embiid's back, yeah. Like, if they just feed him over and over again, and like that's a series that Tristan's going to have to play in, right? So,
right.
You know, if you start, like, you clearly can't, like, I don't know if you can start Love against them. I just don't know why you would be like, oh, hey, you know what we really want? We want our second best player to pick up 3,000 in 5 minutes.
That's, okay, I thought you meant just not start Love at all. I
was like, no.
No, huh? No. I'm saying you go back to the more traditional lineup.
Yeah, sure.
You put Tristan or Nance in, probably Tristan. But even then, right? Like, Tristan's probably going to pick up two fouls.
Yeah, at that point, you're throwing some bodies, and then Perkins has to come in.
Perkins is just going to have to hurt him.
Right. It's a good thing they signed him. So, and that's the question, right? Like, if he's just eating them alive with fouls, that can really mess things up. Like, that can really, especially for a team like, this is what's weird about this. Like, this team being a LeBron team is very strange based on what we've known for him forever. But like, they're a rhythm team now, right? Like, they have all these shooters and they're kind of up tempo and they get out in transition and they play with energy and it's flow and it's about like creating, like, you know, overloading the defense with their fear of LeBron and reversing it and all of this stuff. And if you slow it down and grind it out and it's possession by possession by possession, I don't know that benefits them because I don't know how many guys they have that can break down a defense one-on-one. They have way more than they did before the deadline, right? Like,
right.
I think Clarkson can do it a little bit. I think Hood can do it a little bit. I think Hill could do it a little bit. They've got more guys that can do it.
Kevin Love certainly helps there.
Right. Versus like the Sixers, you're very much like, oh, their entire plan is Ben Simmons is going to exploit whatever mismatch he has, and Joel Embiid is going to just be a fire-breathing dragon. And that's a pretty good formula. You know, that's a pretty simple and basic formula. So if I get to the basketball side of it, I'm scared to death for Cleveland. If I get into the big picture, what I've seen from young teams like this before, I'm like, but LeBron will probably figure out something.
That one Philly game was interesting because it really was so different than what you'd expect from Philly when they have Embiid in there. Like, Embiid just draws so much attention, but the Cavs just couldn't play a traditional guy when Ben Simmons is operating basically as the tallest guy on the floor there. Like, they, it just was Simmons and four shooters, and it was kind of like watching LeBron, where it's, okay, he's just going to exploit a mismatch, he's going to get into the paint, if there's an open shooter, he's going to find him, or he's going to dunk. So, yeah, it's hard to look at that game and come with takeaways on what that series would look like, because Embiid, as you said, he's just a fire-breathing dragon, and that just completely changes your entire game plan.
A big part about Embiid is that he's literally not even 1% afraid.
No, I think
that matters a lot in the playoffs. Like, I do not expect any timidity. I don't know the word.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to be timid.
He's not going to be like DeRozan after the series where, well, if we had LeBron, we would have won.
Not ideal. That was still one of the, like, and that's why you just can never. That's why I just can't do it. But going back to the Sixers, one thing I do think is interesting, and Justin, I've talked about this with you before. Mm-hmm. I do think that the first and second half of that game were actually really instructive as to why it's easy to think a team can give LeBron more trouble than they actually can. And I think what it comes down to in the first half, Philly was just switching everything. They didn't really care who they switched on to LeBron, really. They would switch guards onto him. They would switch Amir Johnson onto him. And he didn't play that well because LeBron wasn't playing that hard because it's April and the playoffs haven't started yet.
But But isn't that the whole thing? Is like LeBron knows when it's time to go. Like, I don't understand how it's like if he plays badly, it's, LeBron's not taking it seriously.
And
if
Hold on.
Which is it?
No. Let me get to my point, which is I think switch heavy defenses are especially effective in the regular season when guys aren't as aggressive as they are in the postseason. LeBron will go very, very, very deep into his energy reserves in the postseason, like any other player does, in a way that they can't in the regular season. LeBron can't ISO 12 possessions in a row every single night.
Right.
It's not wise. I'm not making
sense. You're not understanding what you're talking about.
So what I'm saying is in the second half, he was like, all right, fuck it. I'm doing it. You're switching Marco Bellinelli onto me. I'm going to destroy him over and over and over again. And I don't think you're going to have any low-key habs against any team that's willing to switch like they switched in the first half on him.
Yeah.
That was my point.
Part of that is he definitely got engaged because I love that this is still part of his DNA, that he's still like – he gets insulted when people do that. They switched on him, and he did it like the first time and was like, that's annoying. Okay, fine. And then they kept doing it, and he was like, you're putting Marco Bellinelli on me? I'm LeBron fucking James. No, you don't get to put Marco Bellinelli on me.
To be fair, you'd get offended by that too if you lost out on a championship because a team put J.J. Barea on you and you didn't take advantage of it.
Was Bellinelli on the 2014 Spurs? I can't remember.
I don't think so. I don't think he's got a championship.
No, I don't think so either. But the point is, switch heavy defenses, like you say, oh, they got all these guys to switch onto LeBron. They really don't, because they don't really have any one guy to take out LeBron if he's really going after him.
Well, no one does. It's about making him. It's just about exhausting him.
I just don't think he gets that tired in the playoffs.
I don't know, man. I think he's more tired than he's ever been.
He looked pretty damn tired in the finals last year, which, again, goes to why they have Jeff Green.
And I think a lot of the defensive stuff is that. I think a lot of the defensive stuff is that he's just tired, and it's exhausting. I think offense is still really easy for him.
Yeah, that's really the only part of his game that you've actually seen regression and fatigue, right?
Yeah, which is crazy because typically with veteran players, it's the opposite. Typically with veteran players – it's that their offense continues, their offense kind of slides, and their jumper kind of goes away in the athleticism, and then they're not able to jump as much, but they're still really great everywhere. You know, they're still really great defensively. Mm-hmm. Become defenders.
That's why it's so hard with LeBron, because he's also such a lazy asshole. We can't tell.
Yeah, that's a lot of it. And like, you know, that really is part of it. I think the window was a lot more narrow a month ago, and that was what my article was about. Like, I really think that a month ago there was a real risk, and I still have a little bit of concern over, you know, what happens when he goes to find. There will be a time whether it's this year or in 3 years or whenever, when he goes to find that energy and it's not there, when he's like, okay, and now I will kick it up and no, I don't have it. It's just not there.
The car stalls.
And like last year, honestly, there were signs too with like Kevin Durant, like beat him. Like Kevin Durant beat
him. Yeah. He was not. Yeah, that was one of those moments where you're like, okay, he no longer can do that. And I'm with you, Matt. Like a month ago, I was picking the Raptors to come out of the East until I saw otherwise. Them kind of falling off and Kevin Love looking good quicker than I expected kind of put me back into kind of that arrogant mode. And also now I have that little shred of hope of what would happen if Golden State doesn't make it to the finals and all of a sudden you don't have to go against that four-headed monster. I know they're considerably worse than the Rockets, but it gives me a little shred of hope. I still do have some concerns. I think facing Toronto round two is far from ideal. Like, I think if you want to play Toronto, it's as late as possible because that's going to give you more time to figure things out. And if it was a second round series against the Boston Celtics instead without Kyrie, that would be a whole lot easier. But it's the Cavs, so they're going to make things as difficult on themselves as possible unless Milwaukee gifts them a win tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what their first round looks like, right? If they just tear through things or if it's like, oh, no, like teams really can't hang with them. Because that's really the difference, right? It's like there's differences in winning, but if you aren't as impressive. But
they were awful in the first round last year against Indy. Like they swept them, but they were awful. Like that.
I went to that game three where they were down like 26 at half, and they somehow stormed back. But you're right. I think three of the four games came down to the last shot or two shots.
Yep. And their playoff defensive rating got worse than the regular season. Oh,
too bad Ty Lue's
secret sauce
defense didn't work.
I can't believe he's doing that again.
I guarantee you, Matt, that they're going to have a top 16 defense in the playoffs.
I guarantee it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you've gone out on that limb there. I'm glad
you know what Ty Lue's like actually I have a secret defense thing is? It's just the "and is this your card?" where he just keeps pulling them out. He's not breaking the illusion.
The Cavs playoff defense is basically they go for more home runs. Like, they try to take away whatever an opponent does best, and they try to get the steal and stuff. And they're like, well, if we tried to play this possession honestly, they're probably still going to score on us a lot. So let's just try to blow things up and hope the other team falls apart.
It's crazy to me that, though, I made this, like, I was talking about this with Zach Lowe and all these things. Like, on my pod with Lowe, like, Zach actually made the point of, because I brought up the 7 seconds or less Suns, and he's like, that's actually not a bad comp. But their offense is so prolific, you know? Whether it's just like their offense is legendary and their playoff defense is okay, and that's enough, you know? And
then it's like Mike D'Antoni, LeBron teams don't get worse in the playoffs.
Right. So like that's the model of how they want to go about it.
Yeah, 100%. And
talk about this for a while, there's a good chance that defense matters less than it used to. Like, defense may just not matter anymore in the NBA playoffs. Because there are all these teams, like Minnesota's not good. You know, I think Golden State's been horrible. We all expect them to be different, but
yeah, they're definitely kind of coasting. There's a lot of those Cavs of years past signs with them where or at least back when the Cavs actually had some defensive potential and they were slacking off.
Matt, I'm gonna laugh my ass off if after all this time we all this hand wringing about the Warriors, they actually just finally learned the lesson from the Cavs of you don't have to take it that seriously.
I think the hand wringing is overstated. Like, I don't think that there's actually that much hand-wringing going on. Like,
just like the concerns, like, oh, the defense. Well, maybe Draymond's taking a little step back.
Sort of stuff that's happened. You know, it's not like, because, and that's part of it with me, too, is like, I can point out how bad LeBron's defense has been and this, that, and the other. But it's like, look, man, Like I've seen that. I was at the 2012, 2013 finals. Like I know what he can do. Mm-hmm. Like
I think Carter's talking specifically about the Warriors, not the Cavs.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, it's the same kind of idea though of when you've seen those guys, like, you can point out, like, this is stuff that's happened, but you also understand how good they are.
Right.
And like, yeah, but I'm seeing actual concern that, like, oh, maybe Draymond lost a little step here or there and things like that. Have you not seen that?
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's like
a but that's a health thing, right? Like, he's had those back issues and he's undersized for his position.
That's kind of what I was saying.
It is kind of the same thing though with LeBron, where I do wonder, like, well, look, what if they go to the well and then it's just not there, you know? Because
I mean, it wasn't that the finals was he tried to go to the well against Durant and got cooked.
Yeah, but it's also with the Warriors, where like, look, what if Draymond just doesn't have it this year?
What it's possible. Needed, like, I'm just saying it would be funny if we thought maybe that was possible, and it was like, dude, resting. We were just resting, you idiots.
Well, what's really going to happen is Jamal Murray in the first round is going to avenge the Nuggets for what happened back in 2014 with Steph upsetting the Nuggets.
Everyone never wants that matchup. In large part because there's no way that ends badly for them. Like, you can't look bad losing to the Warriors.
Right.
You just can't. Like, it's just – there's no way for you to really look like –
Nikola Jokic might.
Yeah, but even then, you know, it's like, okay, well, Jokic's defense is bad, but he's playing the Warriors, you know? Like, okay, he's got to get better. It's his first playoffs. He's a young player. He's bad defensively, sure. Like, Damian Lillard – was bad. I don't think Jokic will ever be good, but definitely. But I also think, like, you know, I think you can definitely still win despite him being bad defensively. That's not a concern for me.
I've really enjoyed you enjoying Jamal Murray this year. Watching.
I love Jamal, man.
He's the best.
I love Jamal. He is, like, he's such a killer. He is just such a killer. And he's also hilarious because, like, I asked him, I was like, hey, you know, like, you went to Kentucky, you're part of, you know, Big Blue Nation. I was like, who's the best Kentucky player in the NBA? And he's like, well, it's me. And we're not like, there was no like, ha ha ha, like, he's 100% serious. Jamal Murray thinks he's the best Kentucky player in the NBA. Like, no doubt.
Yeah.
100%.
I wonder what theories Kyrie would come up with if he meditated as much as Jamal Murray does.
Oh god! It's really crazy that he's on the same team as Jaylen Brown, who's like actually thoughtful and interesting. It's
really weird. Jaylen's got to be so annoyed by him.
Yeah, Kyrie probably.
I imagine a lot of like scenes where Jaylen's like walking down a hall and just like just on his tail is Kyrie just talking his ear off about something.
Jaylen definitely gets annoyed by how often Kyrie uses the word we talking about things they believe.
Right.
Oh, Kyrie, what a weirdo. Score first guards. Don't you just love him?
Where are you? I'm sad that he's hurt for a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons is I was really kind of looking forward to the possibility of them getting into a matchup and then something like some sort of controversy erupting with Kawhi. That would cause you guys to actually have some sort of like level of like mixed feelings about the situation.
Well, I mean, the crazy thing to me is thinking about, because something I got really upset over in the offseason was, one, I thought the Cavs should have found a way to keep David Griffin, but I don't think that was possible with Dan Gilbert. But it's crazy to think that even if they smooth that situation over, that Kyrie wasn't going to be able to make it through the year physically, because Boston managed the hell out of his minutes and there's no way the Cavs would have done that. They would have ran him into the ground the same way. And even if they hung on to Isaiah Thomas, he wasn't able to make it through this year. So I wonder if that's something that factors into LeBron's thinking at all. Probably not.
Guys, that, like, are you like, how prepared are you for this being the last run? Like, if he could definitely resign and or they could win the title. Like, I wrote that in the piece, like, hey, look, what if the Warriors do get knocked off by Houston? And
how
and
weird would that be if this damn team won the title? Like, I part of me would actually be mad that these goofs could do this for a year and then win a title.
but part of you would be like, this is amazing.
And oh, yeah. It would be fuel for so many jokes.
He's the best player and everything is great. And, you know, and just, and more than anything, like, one, it helps LeBron's legacy, obviously. But two, also, like, you would just be able to completely shove it in everybody's face about it. Like, everyone that's made comments, like, all of Warriors Twitter and all of...
I don't think that's in my nature to really do that, though. Maybe Carter might. To answer your question about how mentally prepared I am for another departure, I don't know. Like, this is the third time that it's been possible in the last 4 years. It certainly feels like the time with the most possibility behind it. The free agent class not being great this year in terms of, like, who LeBron could create a fresh super team with isn't great. I think Daryl Morey might be able to put something together in Houston, and that'd be a situation where it's understandable. If he does leave, like, there's not really going to be a whole lot of animosity from me. Like, it's kind of understandable, especially with how frustrating this organization has been. I think the most likely scenario is signing another one-year deal and then kind of pushing this until next offseason. But yeah, I mean, if I was stressing about what LeBron is thinking on a nightly basis, I already have enough things going on in my life. I don't need that kind of pressure.
Justin and I are both in the process of planning weddings, and that really gives you a lot of great perspective of just like, I just like, I don't know, man, I'm just like much more of a grown-up than I was when LeBron left the first time, you know? Like,
I was an idiot. I was a young idiot.
I'm probably talking about his situation going into the playoffs, and it's got, like, I was watching, like, the decision, and then, like, the 2010 series versus the Celtics, and all these things. So it's been, like, just really crazy to be like, oh, yeah, like, all this stuff happened. Like,
remember he shot left-handed?
Yeah.
That gives me PTSD.
I mentioned the elbow because I'm still like, look, something was wrong. Like, I don't care what he says or whatever. Like, something was wrong with him that series. It was very not okay.
It was strange. I don't know. Like, I just don't, like, get that hurt. I think if anything, I mean, I'm preparing myself for the possibility that the Cavs will probably never be this good ever again.
That's
what I prepare myself for, is because you have unstable leadership, you have ownership that really, in a lot of ways, you could argue the Cavs are one of the luckiest franchises in the history of sports.
I disagree, man. They lost out on the Anthony Davis lottery.
No, it's
are the least lucky team in NBA history.
But, like, you know, they won four lotteries. The perhaps greatest player of all time was born right next door. It's just like, you know, it never felt all the way sustainable if things end up going where they go. But, you know, I really do think I'm with Justin. I still think it's more likely he stays just because the other options aren't that appealing now.
Especially after they get Kawhi.
Of course. Hashtag soon. But, you know, I don't know. I'm just not that worked up about it at an emotional level anymore.
But let me ask this, because it's great that you guys are getting married. Congratulations. And that all of these good things are happening to you. Is any of that also related to the fact that they won the 2016 title and it kind of like, well, no matter what, we got that.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I would be an absolute disaster if they didn't have that.
Sure. I think that's a really good point, is like, we have the perspective that having won the title grants you as a fan, right? Like, you don't get that perspective if you're just a fan of a loser.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily get mad at him for leaving if they hadn't won in 2016. Like, I kind of got over the decision. Yeah, I got over the decision before he came back. Like, it would be sad. But yeah, that aspect wouldn't change. But yes, I would be in a complete panic attack, because I'd be like, oh, now I'm never going to see any of my teams win a championship.
Right.
Except, yeah, I think you're right.
Except the Jets are. We're going to pivot into a Winnipeg Jets podcast in the, like, next week or two here.
I Justin, I couldn't tell you how disinterested I am in that.
I'm going to force it on you.
That's all it. Right.
Got to stay fresh.
All righty. So we might as well wrap things up. Matt, after all the things we've said, is any of this going to matter? Do you really think, what's your gut take on where the Cavs are going to end up this season?
And this off season, joint dual question.
Yeah. Seeing as you put that into our minds.
I think LeBron's gone.
Well, there you go.
No matter what happens.
Well, yeah, I honestly just think it's Gilbert. I think that's the thing is, I think he can cover for everything else. And at the end of it, and like him have the kids moving school is tough, and there's all these reasons. But I do think like LeBron is a guy that makes emotional decisions. Like he's not entirely. Like sometimes he's about business and just the cold blooded nature. But sometimes it's about the personal stuff. And I think the timing of a lot of stuff that went on in the summer with Gilbert just pushed him too far, and he doesn't like it became a power battle. And one thing that is going on is like LeBron doesn't want to have to. LeBron isn't at this point willing to deal with anything that he feels like he shouldn't at this point. And I think that's part of that. It's not any one factor with Gilbert. I think it's a lot of different things, but I think mm-hmm. that's a big, big part of it. Now, I'm not saying he's gone, it's over, because I do believe like LeBron hasn't decided anything. Like LeBron will decide what he's going to do.
So what you're trying to say is that you're picking the Cavs to win it all this year.
Ow!
A Cavs-Rockets finals is awfully interesting to me. I'm way more interested in that than I am in, like, Raptors-Warriors. So
I'm sorry. I want to extend this for, like, two more minutes because I have a question for you. Is your feeling that the Cavs-Raptors is more – or Cavs-Rockets is more interesting and the Cavs have a chance, is that based in analysis or is that based in – gut feeling? And if so, if both, then what percentage would you give it? Because mine would be like, is like 99% gut feeling, which doesn't feel great.
No, I think there's tactical issues. I mean look, you know, Houston's big advantage in terms of being able to produce more three-pointers to outpace teams, that's eliminated with Cleveland, because Cleveland literally has set records for the most three-pointers, right? And they still have Korver, and they've got Smith, and they've got guys like Hill, and obviously, you know, devastating weapon Jeff Green. So like they can, I think they can keep pace with Houston. And if you can keep pace with Houston, then you're going to have a chance. And even though Houston's defense is better than the Cavaliers, like it's not so much better that Cleveland can't crack it. And so there's all these ways. I don't know. I would think that series would be. I know like the odds on that series would be a lot closer than the odds on Cavs Warriors would be.
I just said there would be a chance. Forgiven James Harden, and I won't until I see him win a really big series.
Yeah,
it's, Game Seven's gonna stick with me a long time.
I've heard this from y'all before, and it's weird to me because I'm like, really, people have said the same stuff about LeBron. Like, this is exactly where LeBron was.
Yeah, you know? I don't think James Harden's LeBron.
Yeah, well, I think LeBron had also dragged a really bad team to the finals pretty damn early on. It wasn't the like, yeah. It wasn't the exact same narrative, but I get what you're saying.
I get it. I just think it's different. Other than Boston, where I think his biggest failure was probably Miami, but yeah. We'd already seen him do such amazing playoff things in the past as the team's best player, taking them deep. That was like, well, that felt more because he wanted to leave. Because he was hurt. It just felt different.
Again, though, it's like, it's not like Harden's been horrible in every single series he's been in every single game. Like,
right.
There are these isolated incidences, which you can point at. And even if you want to say, like, I'm not saying he's LeBron, because no one's LeBron. But my point is more that we've seen this with a lot of stars. Like, Dirk Nowitzki had this label, and all of these guys. Like, there are all of these issues that the guys go through until they break through. And then all of a sudden, it changes. So
not everyone breaks through, though, is my point. I'm not going to say he can't do it. I just kind of want to see it. That's all. That's literally all it is. I just kind of need to see it first.
And me, I just feel better about two All-Stars versus two All-Stars because the Warriors scare the living hell out of me.
That's really what it should come down to. I think you're right there.
Any final thoughts, guys?
I got it. I already extended it, so that's on me.
I actually want to know what you guys think about the new guys and whether they're ready for this moment. Like, you know, LeBron's awesome and LeBron's all this, but like, look, if the role players do struggle, that is going to be a problem. Like, are Nance and Clarkson ready for what they're about to walk into? Like, I think George Hill is, because George Hill's been around, right? Like, George Hill's got Spurs DNA, but I don't know, like, Clarkson and Hood and these guys, I don't know what their situation, like, if they're prepared for what they're walking into. Like, there's a lot of pressure when LeBron's giving you the ball.
Yeah, I don't think Clarkson knows better. I think Nance is going to be fine as long as he's not accumulating fouls, which I'm not super confident in. But, hey, I guess they got a cornerstone piece there in Jeff Green that's going to alleviate any concerns there. As you said, George Hill, I don't worry about. Rodney Hood is a real X factor. Like, I have no idea what to expect with him. And then Clarkson, as I said, I just don't think he knows better. I think he's going to take shots whenever he has the chance.
I will say they're kind of in a lot of ways, because they have, you know, obviously LeBron and Love are way better than everyone else on the team. And then there's kind of this large middle tier in their roster from spots like 4 through like 11 that they do have a little bit of insulation in case the moment is a little too big. You know, Hood's not going well. Well, let's throw Korver out there, or let's throw JR out there and see if he can find a spark. Clarkson's not going well. Well, Calderon's been great all year. You know, you can live with that if Clarkson's playing a little cold. Nance isn't going well. Well, you just play a little bit more Love at center, throw Tristan out there for a bit and some spot minutes. I'm not saying, you know, obviously you want your players to play well, but I do think they have a little bit of insulation there. But I do think, to your point, the ceiling gets a lot lower if the new guys don't play, if the moment's too big for the new guys. But I just don't know how much that ceiling matters until the finals.
If I told you guys after the 2016 title that in 2 years you would be like, well, don't worry, we've got Jose Calderon, what would your reaction
be? If you told me 2 months ago that I said that.
Also,
I'm a Calderon respecter.
I need to get a sense of where you guys are with JR.
I'm basically ready to take him out of the lineup. I think they're still going to keep giving him opportunities, because when he does get going, he can lift you up. But they just have too many reliable, or not reliable, but they have better options. Like, I think Rodney Hood's floor defensively is way higher than JR's, even though Hood isn't a great defender. I think with those second units, you're going to see Clarkson with either LeBron or Calderon or some other ball handler, and it just kind of negates the necessity for JR, especially with Korver there too.
He just doesn't shoot flames like he used to, and that was kind of the whole point. You know, it's in a lot of ways, I just think it's like Justin's kind of talked about, like, throw him out, see what he's got, then have a quick leash, but that has plenty of problematic implications too. You know, where I am with it is, it's kind of a bummer. I'm not going to probably harp on it like I do with players I like less. And, you know, I think that's,
yeah, it's sad.
You know, at least on Twitter, you know, as a writer, you know, if you're writing a column, you kind of have to throw that stuff out the window and just talk about it. But I'm not just going to sit and be like, fuck JR. Cause, like, I don't know. I like JR, and it doesn't, and maybe that's stupid or overly sentimental of me, but I like JR, and I will always be happy every time he hits a three.
It's tough though, because like when everybody's freaking out over the team and they're like, god, this, that, and the other is such a problem, and this guy is so bad, and I'm like, why are you guys not talking? Like, how do you complain and then not mention JR? And it's, I get like what he did is just really crazy to me that it's just crazy to me in general that JR Smith has built up this much equity with anybody.
Yeah, well, I think for Carter and I, we just kind of moved on where it's, if JR's playing poorly, like, that's just kind of the status quo, and it doesn't need to be pointed out every night. For the rest of Cavs Twitter, it basically comes down to, well, we still have Tristan and Ty Lue to blame, so
yeah,
we can blame Ty because our players are flawless and he's the only one holding them back.
Yeah, it's not like a lack of like frustration with JR as much as there are people, especially in the Cavs Twitter sphere, that really, really have much more enmity towards other guys. And I do think there is a bit of like a, yeah, we know JR hasn't been good for 2 years. It's hard to be like, I mean, we've tried to like kind of point out like, hey, maybe JR shouldn't be playing 30 minutes right now. But you know, like the, like to just completely hammer, like, yeah, JR sucks now. It's like, well, yeah, he does. It's just like, there's not that much interesting stuff to say about it, I guess.
Right.
And for most of the year, there really weren't that many better options.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the big thing is
interesting to talk about how much he sucks.
What?
Versus how much fun it is to talk about Jeff Green sucking.
Well,
we don't complain about Jeff Green sucking. We just complain about the role. I think he could be really effective in a different role. I don't want him completely out of the rotation.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed what Jeff Green has brought this year, and we've talked about it plenty. It's more just like, hey, quit over relying on him and putting him in bad spots. Don't put him in the corner to be a spot up shooter. And when he takes those shots, don't let him. Tell him not to. Like, you know, it's like, we really don't hate Jeff Green. In fact, like, once again, as I said earlier in the year, people were making fun of us for being so pleased with him.
I want him running with the second unit with LeBron. Like, I want them to kind of go back to LeBron subbing out early and maybe featuring Love a little bit more in those lineups, and then just having, like, Clarkson, LeBron running, Jeff Green, and all those guys that do well in transition.
I'll say it, Matt. You're in my head. Because every time I've gone to compliment him, I just feel like you're going to be like, I don't like it. So this is on you.
I do get worried every time I tweet. And ultimately, if you can do that to anybody, that's the real goal of Twitter, is to get into people's heads, right?
You win, you son of a bitch.
One more. I'm sorry. What team do you guys most want to beat? What's the one that you're just like, The in the East that you're very much.
I was going to say whoever's in the finals,
right?
I'll
be proud of them if they handle the Sixers. Is that a good answer? Like,
yeah.
The Sixers,
and you feel something
that's coming up, and I'll be proud of them if they're like, no, we're just way better than you, and you're not ready for us yet. That would be pretty cool.
Like, I really like Toronto, but mostly because that's where I feel like there's the most possibility for banter. I'm going to go with Toronto, just because I know more Toronto bloggers, and like, I don't really feel anything for Philly, and that would be a more satisfying win to see them like handle Philly. But beating Toronto, especially because they are a much better team this year, I think that would be the most fun to watch.
But also a little depressing.
Would you get anything out of beating Boston without Kyrie?
No, don't care. They're not going to be there. I don't care.
That's sad.
What?
That should have been such a fun battle.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I was really looking forward to it. Like, half my bookmarks are tweets that I was going to go off on when the Cavs beat Boston. And like, now it's like, it's not as fun to retweet that stuff when Boston gets eliminated in the first round without Kyrie, or the second round against Philly, or whatever happens. Oh, well,
pretty wild. Hopefully Milwaukee can beat Philly in this finale so the Cavs can pop back up to 3 and they can just take care of them in the second round.
Yeah, let's get our conference finals in the conference finals. There's no fun in it being the second round again against Toronto.
100%.
All right. Well, that's probably a good spot to wrap it up. Matt, we really do appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for getting in our heads, because we are unchecked far too frequently, and sometimes we need someone to rein us in. So we do appreciate you playing that role.
Hopefully we can annoy you a little bit, too.
Yeah. Yeah. We like being that annoying little brother to you sometimes.
Well, that's my nightmare, is like the Cavs sweep the Eastern Conference, and then my mentions are just going to be just so much liquid fire. That's why I've hedged so hard the last week.
Just know, so we do it out of love.
Yeah, I like that you wrote this big column as though it was like an intellectual exercise. This is just a long play hedge so people don't yell at you.
And yet it's going to be effective because I can be like, hey, look, I said, I've got the receipts.
Yeah, yeah, Matt, I'm very sure that seeing a link and a headline is going to change how people are coming at you. Because when people are angry in mentions, they're not looking for facts.
I just see, but that's the thing is, I don't care if they're angry. I just care that I'm right. That's what's important.
And that's why we get along, because ultimately that's all I care about too. All right. Thank you very much, Matt. Thank you to our listeners. As I said at the beginning of the podcast, you can support the show by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribing. We figured out last episode that I cannot read the reviews we get on iTunes, so Carter's going to read them to me before bed every night. So,
before we go, we have a new review that Matt's going to like.
Oh, okay.
The headline of the review is "My go-to for when Jeff Green starts." 5 stars. These guys also question why Jeff Green starts continues to nearly double Larry Nance's minutes. Thanks, guys.
That is a great spot to end it. So thanks again, guys. And as always, go Cavs.